The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to What About Wealth? Making it, investing it, protecting it, leaving a legacy with your hosts, Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. In today's economy, preserving wealth has become more important than ever, especially when it comes to our future generations. Now, here is Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee.
Hey, good morning, everyone. This is Rich Bloomfield.
And this is Rick Durfee. Good morning, good morning. I'm the lawyer.
And I guess I was supposed to say I'm the CPA. So, but after yesterday's filing deadline for business tax returns, I'm not sure that I want to be anymore. So I had a hard time saying that this morning.
This is just buyer's remorse after all that time and energy to establish a career as a certified public accountant. You get beat up on tax filing day.
Oh, man. It's, you know, Rick, it's actually so much more complicated and difficult than it was when I started in the business. And I think you told me this morning it's Murphy's Law of technology, that it just – the complication or the regulation, everything expands to fill – every bit of bandwidth that is available, and that's really happening. It's really disappointing when you see how insane our tax system really is. So, not that we're going to spend a lot of time on that today, but it does complicate everything that we do, and it's just, you know, it could be so simple and take so much less of everybody's time and effort and scheming and still collect, you know, the same amount of tax. But one day I'll be president, and then we can fix that.
So. There you go. There you go.
So what are we going to talk about today, Rick?
We have to talk today? Oh, yeah. Okay. We're going to talk about – we have a great topic today. It's choice of entity and business structures for entrepreneurs and, I might add, professionals, people that have got a great idea – or a great business plan, and they want to make it go, and they want to take it to the marketplace. How do they structure it to protect all their really good ideas, their intellectual property? How do they bring in partners, and where do they get their money? And how do they protect their personal stuff from all the liabilities and risks associated with the business? And this is going to come down to what's the best type of business entity to use in setting up a business. What's the best way to structure that? And how do we set up the books and the bank accounts with the right controls? And we're gonna go through all that. It's gonna be awesome, lots of fun.
Yeah, and that all is so important. And you know, people that have great ideas often never get to see them come to fruition because they screw up all the basic stuff that you have to. That's so important to put in place so that you can actually grow an idea, bring it to the marketplace, and you know, make a living or lots of money for yourself, for your partners, your family, whoever. So anyway, it is going to be an interesting show, and we work with a lot of people like this, and we're kind of scratching our head thinking, you know, we really ought to talk about the basics of this because we see so many people that have the education or the great ideas, but they just somehow – screw it up. So we're going to hopefully give you some ideas on how to not do that. So we need to talk about wealth news, though, things that affect your wealth, things that have happened. And So there always seem to be plenty of those with our current government structure and administration. So what do you think, Rick? What's
Yeah, we've got some interesting things. And, you know, I don't want to be too harsh on our current president because I don't think the one that came before him was any better. But
we need to get some bright guys in there.
Wow. Well, I think they're plenty bright. I think they just have an agenda that's maybe not aligned with the interests of
the best interests of America.
Yeah, the people, and are certainly not consistent with the Constitution. But that's probably going to get me in trouble for saying that to the public. The federal government has raked in a record number of revenue. Its revenue is up. Are we surprised at you know, almost $2.5 trillion in tax revenue in the fiscal year end that ran through October 1st of through the end of August, and that's only the first 11 months. So according to the monthly Treasury statement that the government puts out, government revenues are up. In fact, they're up about $285 billion from this time last year. And in spite of these record-breaking tax revenues, the federal government still managed to pile up $755 billion deficit in the first 11 months of 2013.
And I wonder why our, you know, it hasn't changed for months and months. Funny business accounting is killing me.
Yeah, so but this is like the entrepreneur that comes to us and say, "Wow, my revenue is up. I'm making all this more money, but I'm losing money. I can't figure out how come I can't take home a profit." That's the federal government actually has a similar problem to what we're going to be talking about today with our entrepreneurs. And you know, there's a couple of basic principles. Don't spend more than you earn. And when times are tough, reduce your overhead, a couple of things like that. You know, why worry about that when you're the government and you can just print money? So,
yeah, it's staggering, Rick. We're saying $2.5 trillion is a record for them. But then you compare that to $17 trillion in debt. And it's like, if and that were a business or an individual with, you know, similar ratios, you'd say, you know, you're in deep trouble that you're never going to get out of. So
and that's only the official bank loans. That doesn't include the debt that has not been banked. All of the unfunded liabilities. You know, the real numbers are, and we've talked about this in the past, but the real numbers are $70 trillion or whatever. So
right.
It is astonishing. So on that happy note, the government continues to spend money it doesn't have, and it's raised revenue. You know, we gave the politicians what they wanted, more revenue. We bumped up the tax rate to from 35% to 39.6%. We're giving them the extra 3.8% tax on dividends and interest and capital gains and royalties and all that nonsense, and it's still not enough. And we still haven't even begun. We still haven't even not started to pay for the quote unquote affordable Health Care Act.
Right.
On that happy note, the average price of gasoline has risen again, and has in fact stayed above $3 a gallon for a record period of time. It's average now nationally is about $3.58, roughly almost $3.59 a gallon across the nation. And this is a little lower than it was earlier this year, but we're still above $3 a gallon. And if you drive a big gas hog like I do, you feel the pain on a regular basis.
Well, Rick, so, it's like so many things. It's just, you know, they manage it, and the oil companies and the oil producing nations manage this. So they realize if they move it up too quickly, then, you know, there's outrage and, you know, people are screaming and yelling about it. But if you can just do it and, you know, get people used to the $3 and then $3.50, and then that's kind of how we all get led down the primrose path, right?
So so they raise it to $4 a gallon, and when it comes down to $3.50, that feels good.
Yeah, then we think we're in great shape. So, and that's happened. So there we are.
There we are. The government's spending money it doesn't have. The oil companies are charging us more and taking profits away from us because, of course, we don't develop any of our own energy resources. We have to buy it from foreign countries. So all those just really great policies. So having said all that, Rich, give us our quote of the week. Da-da-da-da. What's the really smart thing we've got to share with somebody that someone said?
Well, I wanted to point out that Forbes just came out with their richest 400 list again, and for the 20th year in a row, Bill Gates is the richest man in America, and this year, in fact, is the richest man in the world. He's moved ahead of Carlos Slim, who in Mexico, who kind of beat him out of that spot last year. So I don't know if that really is important to any of the rest of us, but I thought it was interesting.
You know, I do think it's interesting that Microsoft has become the stodgy old institution. You don't have to be very old to remember when they were the revolutionary, iconoclastic trend setter that was, you know, doing all these new things, and now it's become the institutionalized. It's the man. It's the establishment. So the revolutionaries have become the establishment, and it's kind of interesting.
We're starting over with new revolutionaries now.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see what happens. Okay, so the quote of the week, which, since we're talking about entrepreneurs and starting up businesses today, I thought would be appropriate, is this is from Michael Jordan. I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life. And that's why I succeed. And then another one from Wayne Gretzky. This is a sports day, I guess, today. So he said, his quote is, "You miss 100% of the shots you don't take." So,
yeah.
So again, a good one for entrepreneurs.
You know, the quest for perfection, I want to make 100% of my shots, and if I miss one, I must be a bad person. You see that a lot. We're not going to be perfect. We're going to miss a few, but you still have to keep shooting because you make a few. And that's, I guess, one of the points too.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, our give back story. Here we go, and I love these stories. I can't always find a good one, but I found a good one today that I really like. On January 7th, 2007, four teenagers had gone out for the evening and were then going to go bowling when they were involved in a terrible car accident, and two of the teenagers were killed as a result. And one of those teenagers, well, he was not quite a teenager, Stephen Suggs, was almost 20, was killed instantly. And he was a great guy. Everybody loved him and was a great example for others. He had graduated from high school and was attending school at North Metro Technical School in Aworth, Georgia, anyway. In addition to going to school, he had also worked as a part-time job, and his family and friends wanting to memorialize him and remember him in a positive way decided that they would take all the financial settlement that they got from his accident, and they established a scholarship fund in his name. And the scholarships are based on need and certain other criteria. And they did that partly because that was Stephen's attitude. He was very keen on education and had qualified for the president's list every year and had done very well academically and had a very promising career before him when his life was tragically ended. And the first scholarship that was just awarded went to a young woman who's majoring in automotive technology at the technical school. And through Some other foundations and charitable organizations will be supplemented and given soon. And kind of a final note on this, Stephen's sister on her 16th birthday in January 2008, rather than having gifts for herself, asked everyone, her friends and family to bring money to donate to Stephen's scholarship fund, and she raised an additional $2,000, which is kind of cool. So here's a family that suffered a terrible, terrible loss and has taken that loss and turned it back into giving something to the community and creating a happy memory for other people. You know, I'm thinking about that the girl who's getting this scholarship, she probably didn't know Stephen, didn't have a clue who he was, and yet her life is going to be improved and made better. And so here's unintended happy consequences flowing from the generosity of people responding to a tragedy. I think that's just really awesome.
That is awesome. And the nice thing is, you know, if because you lose someone at that age, and I mean, it's so tragic for the family, but you do something like this, and then their name and their memory and what they stood for can live on, you know, for a long, long time, and managed well, it can be. So it's a really great way to respond to that.
We love to do that. I want to tell another story here that kind of will segue into our topic. And I you and I, Rich, we talk a lot about this and speak around the country. I spoke recently at a convention in Las Vegas. Actually, a convention of libertarians, which is one of the most entertaining and fun conventions to go to. I spoke at that and spoke on a topic similar to what we're going to cover today. And I had someone call me that had been there, and they said, "Okay, we heard you talk about picking, setting up the right business and having the right the right business. So we'd like to know what it is." And I said, "Well, what business do you have?" And they go, no, you're going to tell us the business we should have." And they had, and they're actually very sweet people, and they have since become my client. But they thought that I had the inside track, I guess, on here is the one business that you should start. And I regrettably didn't have that and had to disappoint them and say, "No, sorry, I don't have the genius business idea. If I had the genius business idea, I wouldn't be here trying to pitch you on using me as your lawyer. But I have lots of clients who have genius business ideas. And for them, I can bring my little area of expertise to the table and show you how to do some things with that genius business idea that will save you a lot of money, save you a lot of taxes, save you a lot of grief." And so once they heard that, they said, "Oh, so we have to have the business idea." "Yeah, you pretty much do. Sorry, I do not have an inventory of great businesses to divvy out to people." But when you get that really awesome business idea, there are a whole lot of issues that confront you, and we're gonna talk through some of those. How you structure it, how you manage risk, how you get money, how you deal with partners, how you deal with employees, how you we're gonna cover it all in the balance of our program.
It's gonna be a quick coverage.
Yeah, so. 60,000-foot flyby, but it'll be great. And I guess we've got to go to break now, so we'll pick up this topic, the best business structure for your genius business idea, when we come back from break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Live well and leave a legacy. Durfee Law Group offers dynasty estate planning and asset protection services so you can do just that. We focus on helping our clients gain maximum protection and privacy by providing the right tools and innovative strategies to sustain both immediate and long-term success.
Call us today to set up a complimentary consultation. Call 480-324-8000. That's 480-324-8000. Or visit our website at www.durfeelawgroup.com. That's DURFEELawgroup.com. We'll help you turn the gift of wealth into a blessing for your heirs rather than a curse.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Rich, and I am begrudgingly the CPA today.
and this is Rick, grateful not to be the CPA. I'm the lawyer.
And this is What About Wealth? And again, our topic today is talking about the nuts and bolts of setting up an entity and a business structure if you have a great idea. And Rick, I just can't, as I go through and work with businesses, and I, you know, especially when I get through this time of trying to figure out what people have done with their books and records and their tax structures, and you know, all the you know, I mean, I see good and bad, but probably more bad than good as to how people deal with that. It just seems like people don't quite understand how important it is to set up the basics and just the basic nuts and bolts of the business, because more good ideas are squandered by just not knowing how or dealing with that part of the business than any other single thing. So so I think today we'd just like to talk about some of the just very basic things on the operational issues and making that work. But we wanted to start that out with a story. So
yeah,
why don't you jump into that for us?
I love stories. It's kind of two stories that are so common. We see these. They're almost cliche. And the first is the entrepreneur that's just a genius. He's in his garage tinkering around, the inventor dude or the guy that's got a great business idea, and they run out and they set up a business and they try to make it work, and it fails miserably, and the guy is brilliant in one area of his life but just completely unable to take that mechanical or even entrepreneurial genius and actually make the business work. And then we see similar things in the professional area where someone has paid a huge price and excelled academically and intellectually to obtain professional qualifications and degrees and certifications, and they've passed really tough tests, and they've forked over or borrowed huge amounts of money to buy expensive equipment, and then with all their genius, all their smarts, all this good stuff going for them, they manage to blow it, to mess up the business. And when you are in the position that I guess, Rich, you and I are in, because we do the legal planning, we do the tax planning, and all the reporting and stuff, we're able to see side by side people that are equally qualified in these areas, the equally qualified inventor genius, the equally qualified entrepreneur, the equally qualified professional, and side by side, some are pathetic failures financially, and others are raking in the dough. And we want to tackle that today and talk about why that happens and some of the things that that can be done to address that. And the first one you've mentioned, which I really like, is the books and records. And, you know, I like to talk about the hierarchy of why we keep good financial records. And the first one is because we want to balance the checkbook. That requires a certain level of accounting. The second one is we want to pay our taxes and not go to jail. That requires a certain level of accounting. The third one is that we want an outside party, either a bank to loan us money or an investor to invest in our company. And that requires yet another level of financial accounting and reporting. And if you want to have your business really, really succeed, I guess you should begin by structuring your books and records as if you were trying to persuade a bank to loan you money. And there's just a certain level of accounting and books right. and records that's necessary for that.
Yeah, and we talked about that last week, about preparing your business for a business loan. And so getting into the real nuts and bolts of that, Rick, so this is where we see, you know, people kind of veer off the road right from the beginning. And so, so what I would suggest if you're going to set up a business is that the first thing that you do is that you figure out, you either find someone to do it for you, or you figure out how to do it yourself. And most of the time I would recommend you do it, find somebody to do it for you. The thing that you find in business, or people that succeed in business, is that they surround themselves with people that have capabilities and abilities that they don't have. They have a great idea, or they're a professional and they know how to drill teeth, or they know how to, you know, take care of people in a healthcare setting, or they know how to do law or accounting. But they don't necessarily know how to do all the things that it does to set up a business. So, you know, for example, in our case, Rick, you know, you need to set up an entity. But, you know, even before that, a lot of people just start businesses. They start it in their garage, or they have a great idea, and they start it online, and they get out there and they start, you know, generating some interest and some income. Well, right from the beginning, you ought to have somebody that is helping you set up bank accounts, setting up books and records, whether that's in QuickBooks, which is kind of the default for most people, and I think for good reason. It's easy, and for the most part, you can't screw things up too badly, but you do need to set those up and get somebody to set them up so that they make sense. I just wanted to tell a little story here about that. Most QuickBooks records that I see that people set up themselves are set up the chart of accounts, or, you know, when you go through your listing of income and expenses, is done in alphabetical order. And I just laugh when I see that, because, you know, books are intended to help you manage your business, and you need to know what's happening in the business. And so, for example, I do a lot of work with dental clients, and one of the things that we've done is that we set up their books and records so that they can, because I had all these clients and they were coming in, they were saying, you know, I'm trying to figure out how much I spend on dental supplies, and I'm trying to figure out how much I spend on lab work, and I'm trying to figure out how much I spend on my payroll, and how much I pay, you know, the people in hygiene and the people at the front, and how does that all compare to the total that I bring in? They would get down a piece of paper and they would, you know, figure all this stuff out. So we've just gone through and we re-engineered their whole chart of accounts so that now when they get a financial statement every month, it gives those to them in chunks. And, you know, now it's not in alphabetical order anymore. It's in some sort of logical order that makes sense, and they can manage their business right from that. And any day they want to look, they can go in and see that. Now, every business is different, but that just gives you an idea of, oh, well, you know, you can actually do that with your books and records instead of, I thought it just had to be in alphabetical order. Yeah. So,
well, you know, people got to remember it's your financial statements, and it's got to feed the business owner information that the business owner needs to make intelligent decisions in operating and running the business. And if it doesn't do that, it's frustrating. I want to kind of supplement what you've said, because I have seen this firsthand where people use a chart of accounts and accounting attitudes and approaches and techniques that would apply for one industry, and they export because that's what they know, and then they export that to another industry and it doesn't fit, and they end up doing things wrong, and then they get in trouble because they were doing what would be right in one situation but is not right in another situation. So getting somebody that's not just knowledgeable about accounting generally, but it's that's knowledgeable about the specific industry and type of business that you're running is, I think, crucial. And I think that's what you're hitting at, that it has to be logical and make sense for what you're actually doing.
Right. Right. And, you know, and so just going through a logical progression here. So if that's what happens and you get the business going and you get someone in there and you get some logical books and records set up, then at some point you really need to set up an entity, and that really should happen pretty early on for a lot of reasons. So, Rick, I think we should probably talk about that, and then we can talk about some of these other things that you need to build in once you get an entity set up that makes some sense.
Right. The default usually is, and it's stunning to me, again, we've encountered professionals that 30 years into their practice are still doing the way they started out, and nobody ever came to them and said, hey, you know, there's a better way to do this. And that's a lot of people just go get a checkbook in their own name and then start running the business through their checkbook. And that's, you know, you report that kind of a business on Schedule C. So it's sometimes called a Schedule C business. From a legal side, that's a sole proprietorship, which has several downsides. It's got the most risk. It's got the highest tax burden. And it is the least effective in across the board for operationally. It's the least effective. It's the least effective for raising money. It's the least effective for being able to get intelligent information about what's going on. So, but that's how people most people start their businesses, as a sole proprietorship, and don't stay there long. As soon as you got enough money in the checkbook to do so, you got to form an entity. And entities are managed or governed on a state level and on a federal level. And the state level is going to determine the structure. The federal level is going to determine the taxation. And typically on a state level, you're going to register or file this entity either with the Secretary of State or with the Corporation Commission, depending on the state you live in. And there are some choices, and we can mention the main choices and then kind of hit on them. There's the classic C corporation. There's an S corporation. There are partnerships, and there are limited partnerships and a great variety of – you can have 1L, 2Ls, 3Ls, 4Ls, and all the adding, you know, limited liability, limited partnership. The extra L's mean something. And there is the relatively newcomer, the limited liability company, the LLC, which has become extraordinarily popular. And then there's the hybrid entity, the LLC, taxed as either a C corporation or as an S corporation. And which is best really, really, really depends. The classic C corporation has some very specific applications that it is not only best for, but sometimes even required for. If you're going to be a bank or an insurance company, you probably have to be a C corp no matter what you do. They're just going to force you to do that. If you're going to go public, you have to be a C corporation. But absent those things, an actual C corporation is probably going to be a bad idea. the corporations, and like here's the quick list. Corporations were by law required to file annual reports, and if you don't, they get administratively dissolved. Corporations by law are required to hold annual meetings and document those meetings in minutes, and if you don't, the corporate veil can be breached. And then third, and this is a huge one, stock in a corporation is personal property. If you have a judgment rendered against you, that personal property can be taken away from you. So rarely, if ever, do we recommend C corporations unless you fall into one of those categories that you just have to have it. Now, this we're going to come back to the hybrid here in a second. S corporations, same deal applies with those that we just talked about with the annual filings and annual minutes and the issue of the stock being personal property. But the S corporation is the first of a type of entity we call a flow through entity where, and Rich, this is your bailiwick. We were talking about inside basis and outside basis, where the business income and losses are not taxed at this entity level. They flow through to the owners, to the shareholders, and get taxed there. And there are certain benefits to that. Typically, taxation as an S corporation is desirable for a lot of small businesses because you can take out some of the income as wages and some of the income as S distributions where you avoid certain taxes. So we often end up with an S corporation structure, but, and this is a huge but from the legal side, we almost never use an actual S corporation anymore. They have not, in fact, for the last almost 15, 20 years, have not been used.
By knowledgeable people.
By knowledgeable people. I want to add here that I recently encountered a situation where, frankly, a CPA in a particular place.
No.
Yeah, oh no, was having his clients put highly appreciated or appreciating and huge income generating assets into an S corporation. And he was doing it because, well, he wanted the tax treatment of the S corporation for all this income. And all he was thinking about was this year's tax return. And he wasn't thinking about, well, what's going to happen 20 years from now when all this property and income has appreciated in value and accumulated inside this S corporation and somebody dies, or we want to sell it and get out of it, or we want to use the money to do something else. He was not thinking at all about any of the exit strategies, and that is just a huge plane crash 20, 30 years down the road. And we actually encounter a lot of these people that put the farm in an S corp back in 1968, and today the grandkids want to get it out. And how do we do it without paying the tax man a big chunk of change?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's very difficult. So
it is very difficult. So the S corporation has a use, but one of the uses is not to own property or highly appreciated assets.
It's mostly used for, and I'll just throw this in, if you're running a dental practice or even a law practice
or a print shop or a convenience store,
something like that where then that can be used effectively because you don't have anything that's going up in value. You don't have any assets inside that are going up in value that are you're going to have some built-in gain that you get taxed if you try to take it out. So we often see those, Rick, kind of on the side of a typical legal structure of a business, and you just take the money out of there every year and feed it into the other part of the structure. But it's pretty effective for those kinds of things. And so, and in fact, in some states, for example, if you're a dentist in California, you don't have a choice. You have to run as an S corp. So
you have to be one,
right? Or a C corp. So,
yeah. Wherever possible, if somebody says, "Well, I want the tax benefits of the S corporation or the C corporation," I just want to say this rather than saving it for later. Wherever possible, unless there's some administrative or regulatory barrier, on occasion there is, it is almost always better to have an LLC where you elect to have that limited liability company taxed as whatever corporate structure. And the reasons why are fairly simple and straightforward. And it comes down to this list we mentioned before. LLCs in most places do not have annual filing fees or annual reports that have to be made to the Secretary of State or Corporation Commission. Now, there are some exceptions in that to that in some jurisdictions, but in most places that's the case. LLCs are typically not required by law to have annual meetings and file annual reports. So we'll have to come back to this after our break, I guess. We'll hit this after our break and come back to the other reason why you want an LLC taxed as a corporation instead of a straight-up corporation.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Live well and leave a legacy. Durfee Law Group offers dynasty estate planning and asset protection services so you can do just that. We focus on helping our clients gain maximum protection and privacy by providing the right tools and innovative strategies to sustain both immediate and long-term success. Call us today to set up a complimentary consultation. Call 480-324-8000. That's 480-324-8000. Or visit our website at www.durfeelawgroup.com. That's D-U-R-F-E-E lawgroup.com. We'll help you turn the gift of wealth into a blessing for your heirs rather than a curse.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Rick Durfee. I'm the lawyer.
And this is Rich Bloomfield, and I'm the CPA.
And this is What About Wealth, and our topic this hour is how to structure your business entities for profit and fun if you're an entrepreneur or an inventor. And we were hitting on the hybrid entity, the LLC taxed as a corporation. The last and biggest reason is that if properly structured, your LLC is not personal property, and it's your ownership interest in that cannot be taken away from you by the bad guys. I want to hit some interesting stuff here that in the few minutes we have left for this segment. It's not only important to have the right entity, but you can have the right entity and use it in the wrong way, and it will really, really hurt you. So getting the right entity is only the first part of the equation. The other part of the equation is structuring that entity so that it will give you what you really want. And structuring that often includes who the heck is going to own it. And how do we manage partners? How do we bring in outside funding if we want to raise money? And so I kind of want to hit on some of these issues here. And I guess I can introduce this with another story. An inventor comes in and says, "Hey, I've got this really cool idea, and I've got some patents for it, and we've done some market testing, and people really like it, and they're going to buy it. We think it's going to make a boatload of money, but I've got some partners that this other guy, he's going to do some marketing. This guy, he's going to do some manufacturing. How do I structure this?" And I want to just kind of outline a very simple idea. You don't have to give the partners everything. You can split up property and deals and ideas in a lot of ways. So to illustrate this, I want to go through kind of one way. This is not always the way, but it is one way. So one way to structure deals like this is to segregate property into different areas, and a kind of an intuitive one. If you're going to have a store and you want to buy the real estate that the store is going to be in, you would have the real estate that where the store is going to operate in one entity, and then you would have the operations of the store in another entity, so that they're two separate entities, and your store, your operating store, would pay rent to the entity that owns the real estate. And why do we do this? For a whole bunch of reasons. And part of it's risk management. If there is a liability associated with the store, you do not want that liability to contaminate and spoil the real estate, and vice versa. If there's a liability associated with the real estate, you do not want that liability to contaminate and spoil the good deal you've got going on with the store. So you segregate those out, you split them out into separate things. And if it's the professional practice, if it's the medical or dental, or if it's the same kind of deal, you want to the building that you own where you have your practice owned in a separate entity than the building in which you operate your practice. I actually had early on in my law career, in fact, this was my very, very first client, had a very nice restaurant that was thriving, making a lot of money, and he owned the real estate for the restaurant in the same entity that was operating the restaurant. And there was a liability that came up, and it doesn't matter what it was, but it was a big one, and it was a nasty, ugly one. And he ended up losing not only the restaurant, but also the real estate, because they were held in the same entity. And it would have been a simple, easy thing to protect the real estate had it been in a different entity. So we cannot overemphasize the importance of that. So our idea here with the inventor that's got this really cool idea, you can put that all of the intellectual property associated with that really cool idea in one entity. And you can have
in other words, the patents.
Yeah, the patents and the trade secrets and the even the processes for building it and even the branding, the name for it. And there's a variety of intellectual property, but all of that idea stuff can be owned by one entity. And then the operations and the selling and the manufacturing can be owned in another entity. And then in the one that owns all the intellectual property, Mr. Inventor can keep that for himself. That's his. It was his idea. He owns that. But this operation now, where we're going to go and we're going to make these things, and yet another operation that might be in a different entity where we're going to go take these things that we've made and we're going to sell them. All those can be in separate entities and can have different groups of people that own them. The manufacturing piece, he might have as a partner somebody who's really, really smart and really, really good at manufacturing, and they have equipment and they have expertise that he doesn't have, so he can cut a deal with him. Okay, you know what? You and I, we're going to be partners in this, and I'm going to own a piece and you're going to own a piece, and you're going to manufacture this my widget. And the same on the selling. The guy that's just the marketing genius and can take this widget and sell a gajillion of them so that everybody becomes fabulously wealthy, he can have a separate deal different from the manufacturing deal, and the marketing genius can own a piece of that deal. So all the people that have a particular expertise or ability or equipment or whatever it is, they get to participate in the ownership for what they do. But they don't contaminate the intellectual property of the really great idea. So if one of them explodes, Mr. Marketing Genius, who's so good at selling this stuff, suddenly has some personal issues going on in his life. He's got some substance abuse, or his wife is throwing him out the door or whatever, and suddenly he's no longer such a great marketing genius. Well, bummer. That stinks. But now that risk – doesn't come back and contaminate and mess up the manufacturing part. It doesn't mess up the idea. You're able to segregate that risk into that entity and go out and form a new one. So there's just a lot of factors like that that we look at. And those issues didn't even address now the transition, the succession issues. What the heck are we going to do when we're done with the business? Contrary to what a lot of entrepreneurs believe about themselves, we are not immortal. We are going to die. We don't get to have this business forever. And so someday somebody else is going to own it, or it's going to go away. And do we have a plan for that? Do we have a plan for how do I know when I'm done? When I'm done, how the heck am I getting out? And when I get out, am I going to give a big chunk of this to the tax man, or are my heirs, my family members, my children, or whoever my heirs happen to be, are they going to get it? There's the news is full of celebrities. There's one, an actor for The Sopranos, that died with a $60 million estate. He's going to give half of it up to the tax man, which meant that he did not view his acting revenue as a business, and he didn't structure it with an intelligent succession plan. And so he had an unintended partner, that partner being the IRS, and his partner came to collect when there was a transition event. So
that's how they had that much more money this year.
Yeah. So
people like that.
Rich people dying.
So I don't know. I know we don't have a lot of time left, Rick, but there's a couple of other things that since we're talking to entrepreneurs, that I think bear mentioning here before we sign off today, because we've talked about making sure that you set up the right entity and segregating it and setting up books and records and bank accounts. There are some other things that are just, the basics that you have to worry about, because when you start with this idea, you've got partners or you've got people that come in to work for you. You've got to decide, okay, are these people contractors or are they employees? And they're, we see people get in trouble with that all the time, Rick, where, you want to pay them as a contractor because you don't have to, pay the payroll taxes and provide benefits and all that stuff. And there's a good way and a bad way to do that, and you have to understand what those rules are. So just a note there. And often you're better off in the early days of just outsourcing this stuff, just, finding another group or another company that does what you need done and have them do that. for example, even though you need payroll done, you can outsource that to Intuit or somebody else to do that, and it gets done, and the taxes get paid, and the payroll reports are right. Typically, you don't have any issues with that. And you didn't have to hire somebody to come in and do that.
I want to piggyback on that one little comment. The single biggest tax thing that I've seen kill more businesses than anything else is not doing the payroll taxes right. They do it wrong. They get messed up. The liability is so big and so huge, it can kill a business in a heartbeat.
Right, so, because you go forward and you just build up these latent liabilities that you didn't really realize were there because you're doing it wrong, or you're not reporting it correctly, or you're hiring people as contractors and they really are employees. All those things really do kill people and kill businesses. So it doesn't matter how good your idea is, if you don't do some of this other stuff right, you're not gonna capitalize on it. So, and then the other thing is making sure that you have a good management agreement in place between, if you do bring in partners, make sure that you have an attorney, someone structure that so that you know who's going to make the decisions and legally who has the ability to do certain things. All those things are extremely important. And then just making sure that that you get bank accounts set up and all those things. And Rick, we talked earlier about people that start as a Schedule C and then they forget that they should do something different. I've seen dentists 20 years into their practice making, a couple million dollars a year that are still running off their Schedule C, which is just total insanity. And and they've been doing it, nothing's happened, and so, they think everything will be good. And then suddenly there's an issue, they get sued, and everything gets taken away, including all their personal assets, because they didn't set up an entity. So very important that way, and for tax efficiency. So anyway, I just wanted to hit those important things that you have to do on the front end before you can ever get to an exit strategy, which we can probably spend the last couple of minutes on here.
Well, yeah, never go into a room unless you know how to get out. That's a simple way to say it. Never start a business unless you know how you're getting out. And so many people just don't even think about that. But the way you're getting out drives how you set it up in the first place. And if you set it up without considering that, your options and what becomes available to you for your available choices is narrowed and later on when you want to get out of this thing. So pick the right way to get in, and then you'll have a more effective way to get out. I think we've got to wrap it up here. Here's the call to action. If you've been listening to this, which we hope you have, if you're still there and haven't hung up on us, we love you. Stay, come back for more. But call us, 480-324-8000. Come see us online. Google us. Email us, info@whataboutwealth.com. Or find somebody like us that you can work with. We have clients all over the country that deal with people everywhere. And if we can't help you, we can steer you to local people who can. So give us a holler. Get help. People who do this wrong end up regretting it big time. So get help. And we'll come back next week with another exciting topic on What About Wealth?
Thank you for listening to What About Wealth with hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. Please join us again for another edition next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a profitable week.